Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for at least the next hour on this August the 24th on the West Coast, now August the 25th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. I'd like to also welcome all the folks that are listening to us around the world on Wind Talkers Radio Network and on BlogTalkRadio.com. Well, it's been an exciting day for me. I spent 2 hours visiting with Drew Malone Raines III on his radio show, A Marine's Disquisition, on Blog Talk Radio and on Wind Talkers Radio Network. And we had some very interesting conversation about this bird flu thing and the lawsuits that appear to be rather questionable, to say the least. And we got a call from a very interesting person right at the end of the show. Also got some support from Bill in Colorado, who happened to be listening to the show last Saturday when I confronted Ms. Burgermeister about certain issues. Basically, I was fishing for some information. You could say it was an interview of sorts. And we were able to extract a bit more information than what's published out there. Of course, my line of questioning was quite a bit different from what most talk show hosts are asking her. And we're smelling a rat, and we still haven't found that rat yet. But you know, we can smell the stench, so we know that there's more that's going to be found. Now, tonight, we're going to talk about this issue of pandemics, but we're going to do it in a very unique way, very informative way. And if you've been following the show for the past few weeks, you know that Dr. A. True Ott is my Monday night guest for the remainder of the month of August. In fact, he's been on now. This will be his third time this month. And we're going to get into a paper that he just wrote. Today, it's published on my website, directlightproductions.com. You click on documents. Actually, there are two documents that he recently published, one on the 17th of this month and one today. They're up there for your information, and I encourage you to have a read of those documents. You can even follow along in this discussion. Tonight, we encourage callers, once we establish a foundation of what we're talking about here, I'll announce that a little bit later on, and we'll answer any questions you may have. With that, I'd like to welcome back to Evident Footprints, now my good friend, and just a fabulous American, and someone who's sticking up for all the little people in this country and other parts of the world, Dr. A. True Ott. True, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Don. It's a privilege and pleasure to be on your show, just as I hope it was for you on my show.
Yes.
You did a fantastic job, by the way.
Well, thank you. I'm getting a lot of invitations. Somebody corrected me. That was Bill from Indiana, so I better clear that up. We did hear from Colorado Al, who's regularly on Drew's show, and we heard from Elizabeth Book, who has been at the center of this controversy.
Well, Elizabeth, bless her heart. I mean, she's a victim here. I mean, here she is trying to do the right thing. I don't know the woman. She's emailed me, and I've seen her heartfelt posts out there trying to just to do the right thing, and being misled by what I got to tell you is pure wire fraud.
I mean, yeah, I'm inclined to agree. Yes, do you want to expand on that at all?
Well, I just think our senior citizens have given enough, and they don't need to be taken to the cleaners by people, you know, saying that this bird flu needs support and money. You know, I can't tell you how many hundreds, if not thousands, of hours now I've put in to this project. And you know what? People have asked me to asked if I could take some money from them, and I won't do it. It's immorally wrong for me to do that. There's no need for it, you know, in my opinion. And I'm just here to tell you, if people start, asking and soliciting funds for this or for that, please, people, just run away from them. They're not the real deal.
Yeah, I know that there are other doctors out there or people who have an expertise in, let's say, microbiology. One person that comes to mind is Dr. Bill Deagle. I know that he's, you know, routinely getting this story out and addressing it in a very profound way. I actually had a conversation with him. In fact, I'm going to be on his show this Friday.
Yeah, I made sure that he called you. I hope you don't mind that I gave him your phone number and said you better call. Yeah, fantastic. You know, Bill Deagle has received a lot of very, you know, negative attacks from people that should know better. The man is a genius. I've had so many private conversations with him. And the initial response is, you know, how can one man been so many places and done so many things? Well, it's impossible to do unless you have an incredibly genius IQ, and that's this man. You know, just get out of the way and let him do his job is all I can tell. All I can say to people. Okay,
mm-hmm.
you know, just listening to him for an hour or two on his radio show doesn't do the man justice. I gotta tell you that.
Well, I actually have known him for about three years, and I thought he had my number anyway. we communicate from time to time, but I worked with him and Todd Metallo on the report on the boiling frog a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
And so we've had many conversations.
Well, let's put it this way. It's now on the top of his Rolodex.
yeah. Well, I thank you. This is important information, and he was very interested in this these recent finds that I made as far as who some of these companies are lurking in the background.
That was our topic of discussion today, and I said you must call him.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. The word needs to get out. People really need to see this. So, you know, it's about the message, as you said. There are others too who are doing the same kind of work. I don't know if anyone has been able to locate Alexander S. Jones.
Yes, I did. In fact, I had a very good talk with him last week. He's doing well, relatively speaking. Unemployed, he lost his job with NIH, and is looking to kind of move out of the country a little bit and do a little touring in South America. So he's doing well, and there's another gentleman that put his neck out. Huge a neck out and do the right thing for us. You know, he's concerned about humanity, and another brilliant man. I mean, he's absolutely right up there with Dr. Deagle, and he deserves a medal for what he's done to expose this. And it's unfortunate he has to suffer financially for it.
Yes. Now, I want to get into the nitty gritty of the most recent article you've written. And before I do that, I want to, if I may, just preface my comment that, you know, we focus this attention on these lawsuits and the integrity of the lawsuits and maybe even the purpose of them, because on the surface they appear to be ventures into righting the wrongs that are about to be committed.
Oh, yeah. They look
okay.
Good on the surface, yeah.
But when you get into the background of some of these people, it's very apparent that this is a smokescreen. And it's intended to discredit all this wonderful research that's coming out. Your research, Alexander S. Jones' research, Bill Deagle, even Dr. Rebecca Carley, But I see a sort of a struggle going on, and that's what it's intended to do. And that's
it's intended to divide and conquer. I've been privy to much of the attacks on me behind the scenes. I can just imagine what's been told to Dr. Carley about me. I haven't communicated, unfortunately, to find out. But you know what? I've heard the same things from other sources about her, and I refuse to believe them. I know her better than that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the bottom line is, yeah, there's a movement to discredit and to divide and conquer. And folks, let me just be very clear. And those that are listening, you know, what's going on here with this is criminal. But listen very carefully. I have utmost confidence in the U.S. attorneys I've been communicating with, professionals I've been communicating with. As horrendous and horrific as it is to prove, it is not a crime for a U.S. Army research facility to produce a viral bacterial weapon, biological weapon. It's not against the law. If it was, they'd be arrested and taken to jail for the Ames creation of the Ames super strain of anthrax, okay? And it's not against the law for a company like Baxter or Novartis to make a vaccine against this weaponized virus. Are we clear on that? It's not against the law. What is against the law is when it's released into the public, as in the anthrax attack letters, okay, of the 2001. That's a crime. It's a premeditated assault. What we are trying to do in this country, is try to find out how this was released. We know it was. We know it was created in the laboratory. We know the vaccine is there in the wings to fight against this Franken virus that was created. We know that. But you see, until you have the actual proof of how it was done, there's not a U.S. attorney in this country that will go up against these big boys without that smoking gun.
Mm-hmm.
And see, so anything else to try and obfuscate that fact is a counterproductive in the extreme and pre-designed and predetermined to stop the real work going on. And that's what I've said for 2 months. Now, this individual in Austria seems to think that by showing this truth that I'm attacking her and others, and so she puts out the worst and most vile personal attacks against me. Now, that's the facts and reality of it. You know, and this, but folks, this is serious business. Millions of lives are at stake here. And frankly, we've lost 2 months of time.
Mm-hmm. Now, Saturday on another radio show, it was actually Mark Anderson's When Worlds Collide on RBN, I called in to ask her a couple of questions. And, of course, Drew Raines played that audio on his show today. And I'm not going to play it now, but it was interesting that she tried to turn my questions into accusations of another smear campaign.
Sure.
And I succinctly pointed out that all I'm doing is asking yes or no questions. All you have to do is answer yes or no. But no, I'm smearing her. This is an attempt to smear. And in my estimation, that's not just disingenuous. It's fraudulent to make the claims that she made when they dispute the facts that I know. In fact, I asked questions that I knew the answers to. And so I knew who I was dealing with there. But all of this bickering is unnecessary. I agree with anyone who says, you know, that this is intended to divide us. So let's get to the facts. Let's talk about some history as to how these vaccines have been created throughout our medical history in America.
Right.
Would you care?
If you look at this paper, and again, please do download it, read it, pass it out to whoever. You know, it really does need to spread across this country to get a firm background that what I call vaccine-induced diseases, VID, epidemic outbreaks, what I call videos, have happened very, you know, repeatedly across, you know, the history of medicine in not only America, but the world. And I document a couple that are real notable, because the parallels to what's happening right now are amazingly similar. In 1921, in Kansas City, Missouri, a faux epidemic was created by means of propaganda, basically false advertising. The reports were in the newspaper and in public flyers. School districts, you know, were notified, et cetera, et cetera. Look at this terrible smallpox epidemic that's sweeping our area. Oh my goodness! Every man, woman, and child in the greater Kansas City and Missouri region needs to be vaccinated immediately. And so the vaccines were there waiting. The needles were shot primarily into school children, young children, many adults. Dutifully marched in and got their shots because they believed the lies and propaganda that this was an epidemic raging. Well, within 3 weeks, there was, in fact, an epidemic raging from vaccine-induced smallpox disease. Now, how do I make these claims? Because it's in the judicial record. It's in the court records. There was a whistleblower that was inside of the medical association that came out to a consumer watchdog group and reported what was really happening and gave the documentation, and criminal charges were filed, arrests were made, and convictions were achieved. The sad fact is this was not a victory for Americans, because the news of this was kept completely shut down. It should have been over, you know, in every newspaper across this country in 1921, but it wasn't. It wasn't. And the sad thing was, even though hundreds of people had died and many thousands were permanently crippled and maimed because of this, there were no jail times, no prison sentences issued by the judge, just small token fines and a slap on the wrist and business as usual. That's the reality of what happened in Kansas City. Fast forward 3 years to Pittsburgh, and the same exact modus operandi happened there in Pittsburgh. This time, 1 million vaccines were sold. Same thing, criminal charges filed, convictions made, slap on the wrist fines. And then we go forward to the polio scandal in the 30s and 40s. Folks, polio is a waterborne virus. You get poliomyelitis from drinking contaminated water. All right? So there was this mass push for vaccination with Jonas Salk and his great revelations in the mainstream press. So the elite families of America line up to get themselves and their loved ones vaccinated. And one of those taking the vaccine needle was a man named Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And he came down with a raging case and was refined to a wheelchair. Now, but you didn't know that part of American history. And from that first contaminated batch of polio vaccines, we went into the Sabin vaccine, which was basically attenuated viruses that were weakened and put into sugar cubes. But as I go on to explain, that wasn't what was the problem. The sugar cubes were contaminated. The vaccine was contaminated with green monkey viruses that had mutated, and now we know them to be the cause for so many of our soft tissue cancers. That is, you know, it's basically an epidemic of soft tissue cancer.
Now, so I have a question, if I can interrupt.
You bet.
I've heard.
Oh, smear campaign. I guess. I'm sorry.
I've heard and actually read that there are some bovine strains and some sheep strains that have found their way into certain vaccines. Can you elaborate on that, if that's accurate, and which vaccines that might be?
Bovine strains of which?
Well, in other words, some of these vaccines are developed through cows, let's say, because of their proximity to the human.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you've got the of course the anthrax strain and the hoof and mouth, which is basically the same thing. Cowpox, which was basically the precursor to the smallpox structures. Okay. So yeah, all of this comes from beef strain originally, because there's some interplay there. But yeah, as far as polio, I don't know. This was basically taken from human, I believe. I'm not 100% sure on how the polio vaccine was created back then. That's kind of old history.
Mm-hmm. Well, I brought that up, you know, because we had these over the past few years, and you don't hear about them anymore, but all of a sudden you have these cases of mad cow disease. Now, some say that that's because they're putting sheep parts in the cattle feed. And you would have to assume that if the cow is coming down with something, that it's contracted a disease that the sheep have had. So it makes you wonder what kind of experimentation is going on that they want to see.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm totally in Howard Lyman's camp on that. You know, the mad cowboy, and it's really not so much in the vaccine, Don, as it is in just putting ground up rendered meat products, cow products, into cattle feeding cows to cows and sheep to sheep. That's been shown to do the scrapey thing and the spongiform disease states. And so when we see that jumping from, you know, the cow spongiform disease, when we consume infected cows, that prion does in fact jump into the human, you know, brainstem as well. So that is not so much tied to vaccines, though, as far as I can see in research. It's basically from the, you know, the rendering plants putting these like proteins into feed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's about where I.
I wanted to ask, in terms of these massive amounts of vaccination that are being produced by these different companies, and it appears to me, you know, I don't have the evidence, but it appears that there are several companies involved in the production of these. Are they taking all of this from the Fort Detrick stock, or are they allowing them to replicate these in their own labs? And do you have any information on that?
Well, that's pretty closely guarded trade secrets, okay? What I've been able to piece together is the World Health Organization provides what they call the seed stock. Now, where do they get the seed stock from? I would, because of the tight-knit relationship with Novartis, from their patent to their funding of the NIH and Fort Detrick and even the National Cancer Institute, you see Novartis would be the logical choice for those feed stocks, okay? And they have the master patent. And then if you read that master patent of Novartis, you see that they are calling for what they call vaccine kits to be given to select other companies. So logic would then dictate that they would have the mass seed stock and they would give these viral seed stores basically to GlaxoSmithKline, to Novavax or whatever, to Baxter, and to Sanofi Pasteur under their master corporate patent. they would probably give it in a quite a substantial discount, which would allow these other companies to you know, bring their own vaccine to market and make money on it too. It's like spreading the no pun intended, the slop in the pig trough, okay? So that's what I, again, a lot of it's speculation, Don. It is, I'm not an insider. I don't know for sure, but logic would dictate that's the way it would happen. I would do that if I was, you know, a corporate boardroom planner. Then you've got MedImmune, which is part of, you know, the Wyeth label. MedImmune is the nasal injector, which is virtually completely live viruses going to the nose of our children. And this is the primary vaccine they want to put in our schools. So you see, the problem with this is little Johnny gets this shot of MedImmune up his nose or Jenny's nose, brings it home to mommy and daddy and little baby Jenny in the crib. Typhoid Mary is loose. For 72 hours, these live viruses are going to be all over the place. If you want to spread a pandemic, make a pandemic happen, a la 1921, 1923, and the 1950s in polio and cancer, this is how you do it. You do it by vaccination.
Yes. Now,
the reality is, right now, we have no pandemic, really. Let's be honest with this.
Yeah,
what you might have now is a mild outbreak. Okay, the morbidity is such that it's not even a common cold. So the move to vaccinate is not justified by the means. There's no need for it. In other words,
yeah, but they seem to be chomping at the bit to start making these profits.
That's why I wrote that paper, is because I had to show that look what's happened historically. The parallels to this are just shocking. Like Santayana said, those that don't remember the past are doomed to repeat it. And I put, but those who don't know the past can't be expected to remember it.
Thus,
yes, the need for this paper.
Well, certainly the control of the media and what they've been doing for the past 2 months is trumpeting this pandemic that they know it's coming. Well, then they know that it's via the vaccine. It's not appeared anywhere in nature, to my knowledge. Am I wrong about that?
Well, and yeah, you're again going back to the odds. You know, I was just on Jeff Rentz's show in the last hour, and I explained this. I'll do it again here for the benefit of your listeners. You got to look at the structure of these chromosomes, these eight gene structures. Each virus has eight chromosomal patterns. Now, these chromosome spirals, eight of them, and going down into the very what's called gene clades, gene structures, there's structures within those chromosomes that are voluminous. You've got so many possibilities of combinations. There's literally, you know, billions of random possibilities, you know, going together. But these things don't happen typically by natural design, as far as these things being the combination of bird flu, swine flu, and human flu, three different strains. You see, it has to happen by human intervention. The only way that it could ever happen in nature, and let's be graphic, is if a herd of swine somewhere close to a big city happened to fall in love with a big turkey flock, and they did something very unnatural. They started to mate with each other and passing bodily fluids back, and then these things happened to just start mating with some crazy men in the village. I mean, that's graphic, but you really have to pass bodily fluids and have it be consistent for these recombinations to occur. That's the reality, okay? We see in 1997, Dr. Jeffrey Taubenberger, Fort Detrick, with the use of a supercomputer, that incredible Oracle 8, is able to map out these gene clades, and his first report said, oh, this is a novel recombination, including fragments or gene clades of bird, swine, and three different human strains. Just that report shows that this thing didn't happen by natural selection in 1918. So how did it happen? How could it have possibly been done? How is there any time in pre-1918 history that humans gathered infectious human genes and mixed it with pig genes and mixed it with chicken and turkey genes? Yeah, it's called the typhus fever vaccine scandal of 1916 during the Great War. The Rockefeller Laboratories, thinking they had a great idea to lick typhus fever in the trenches of World War One, took infected humans infected with typhus fever, harvested the pus from their leaf fever blisters, put it all together, different typhus outbreaks in different continents, put it into swine, pig herds, to have it magnify what they thought was bacterial content, harvested from the pigs, and then incubated it in chicken eggs. That's the sequence.
Wow. Doesn't seem quite natural.
Well, and then they inject it back into humans saying, oh, this is your typhus fever vaccine. And folks, millions, listen up, 100 million or so doses were sold. First, primarily to the fighting men on both sides of the trenches of World War One. And yes, indeed, a worldwide pandemic happened from those vaccinations. That's the only way it could have happened.
Now, yes. Now they've revived that virus.
So now with the use of Oracle 8, they've found these intact viral strains of this terribly killer, highly virulent virus, recreated over a 6 and 7 year period until 2003, 2004 was completed, and suddenly now you have a weaponized virus that is incredibly, incredibly dangerous. If you go into PubMed.com and type in the search engine there, Terence Tumpey, T-U-M-P-E-Y, you'll come up with a very interesting unpublished paper. It's scheduled to be published this October in Microbiological Review, but if you pay your fee and sign away your life, you may be able to get a copy downloaded. It's called Resurrected Pandemic Viruses by Tumpey. And it tells exactly how they did it and how they then took this 1918 killer virus that they'd reverse engineered and made it even more deadly. Can you believe that? They improved upon it. It's in his paper. Shows how he did it. Which specific and genes and protein genes they manipulated to make it even more deadly, if possible.
Now, is this a whistleblowing type of document, or is this
that's what's
in
funny?
Your,
it's like
in your face.
See, it's look at me. I am a genius because we did this. And who is Tumpey? NIH and CDC research scientist.
Well, there's the answer.
Now, see again. Yeah. It's okay to publish that because he's doing it under the U.S. military directives. He's not committed any crime. He really cannot be held accountable for doing research science for the U.S. military. He's a good patriotic American. See, that's what the Jane Burgermashers of this world can't get through their heads. It doesn't mean I agree with what he's done. I think it's horrendous. But no laws have been broken. That's the reality. And unless and until we can prove what strain of this, they're calling it 1918-like, 1918-like viruses. is this swine flu pandemic a 1918-like virus? You bet it is. Absolutely. It's a much, much, much less virulent addition. But it is
I haven't seen the statistics on traffic accident deaths, but I would presume more people have died from traffic accidents so far up until this part of August than have died from any kind of flu. And we still don't have a virus for drivers, you know.
Right.
Of course, I guess this one is supposed to take care of that.
You know, Don, I'm hoping that this is just a big money grab and that these vaccines won't be as deadly as I fear they will be. And I'm crossing my fingers that this is just a big way to grab billions and billions of dollars. But I think it's much deeper than that.
Well, I do, too.
Reading that resurrected pandemic virus article, oh, my heavens. You realize they've created 8 different strains of this virus from the 1918 model? Some of them are extremely, you know, insignificant. I think that's what was released. Because, you see, they wouldn't be held liable for a little rhinovirus type of thing. But when you start putting out vaccines of live structures, these recombinant RNA-altered designer viruses, they're just a wild card. That's the best way to describe it. It's a viral wild card because they really don't know for sure. The supercomputer has given them an idea, but there's still a high chance of what they call viral drift. They just don't know which way it'll go. It could go, I guess, one way that it's not going to be a problem. It's going to be very insignificant, like what's already out there. But it's just as even, Stephen, that this will come out to be a killer virus, worse by far than the 1918 one, and with up to 40-50% morbidity. Think about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's obvious this is a grab for quick cash. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And when you have this law that supposedly was passed in Massachusetts that they're going to fine people $1,000 a day until they take this vaccine.
And 30 days in jail until they get the vaccine.
Isn't that extortion? I mean, under color of authority, it doesn't matter. It's extortion.
I smell Barney Frank behind this one. That's something only he would come up with. I'm not a Barney Frank fan, by far from it, and this really stinks. So, you know, yeah, you're right, it's extortion, but it takes away the most basic human civil right, and that's the right to choose your own health plans, I mean your own health products. I tell people this all the time, those that can't see the real problems behind it. But, you know, Americans, I don't care whether you're liberal or conservative, Democrat or independent or whatever, okay, everybody likes to have some control over what they do. It's called a basic freedom. You get up in the morning, you can make a lot of choices. One of the things that really is a good about America is the truth in labeling laws, right? 50 years ago, you didn't know what was in that mystery soup. But today, you can go in and to your soup aisle, you know, and if you happen to be allergic to MSG, you can pick up a Campbell's soup can, that chicken noodle soup, and, oh, my gosh, look at the MSG that's in there. Is there any chicken noodle soup that doesn't have it? Oh, look at this brand. It's all natural. Yeah, I'm going to buy this one. You see? The problem with this virus vaccine is, first of all, nobody's giving us disclosure as to what's really in this stuff. What's the level of attenuated viruses? How alive are they? What's the level of squalene adjuvant? Is it truly 1,000 to 1,000,000 times more than the Gulf War vaccine, as some reports have us believe? When you ask these questions of the health department, they quickly look around and look for cover because they don't know. Now, how can you make an informed consent decision if you don't know what the label says? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And nobody is sitting out there saying, I'm going to inject you with this MSG soup against your will.
Yes.
You see, that's...
Now, you brought up some points that I want to get into. If we can pause just for a second here, I want to give out our phone number. If in case anyone wants to make a comment or has a question to ask Dr. Andrew Ott or myself, I'm not the expert in this, but we'll open up the phone lines in a bit, and I want to get into this discussion of the adjuvants, in particular squalene. I don't know if thimerosal is in this, but I've heard it mentioned several times from some knowledgeable people.
Well, thimerosal is the least of our worries.
Yeah.
And it's bad. It's bad enough. Don't get me wrong. But compared to MF59 squalene, oh, my goodness.
Well, let me give this number out, and let's get into a conversation on that, if we could. Our toll-free number, if you'd like to call in to bbsradio.com, into the Evident Footprints Radio Show. The number is anywhere worldwide, area code 888-815-9756. One more time, that's 888-815-9756. Okay, now we were talking about this issue of the squalene. For our listeners that are new to the show or hearing this for the first time, can you give us a breakdown of what we're talking about here and the impact of having this in one's bloodstream?
Right. The definition of an adjuvant is basically an immune system booster, okay? It basically boosts the immune system's response to the viral antigen or pathogen that's put into the vaccine, okay? And the quicker the vaccine is produced, in other words, if you don't have a lot of lead time to test and to culture the virus under traditional methods, and you can do the immune response by putting a small fraction of a live virus, a small amount, with a booster of an oil and water adjuvant to give the immune system a charge, a boost, to get them to start producing the T1 and killer T cells and et cetera to create the immune response. The danger has been shown by many, many studies. This is called oil and water adjuvant. They've tested various, you know, any type of oil in water structures in a U.S. UCLA laboratories did some extensive studies, and they came out with that there is simply no oil and water adjuvant that is safe. End of story. None.
And my understanding is they're actually illegal, at least in the United States.
Well, I haven't seen anything as far as laws against it. There's FDA recommendations against it. The FDA had a hard time licensing this during the Gulf War I because of all these studies. You know, it's if you tried to put it through before the Gulf War, you just wouldn't get a licensing certification by the FDA. But again, the need for a quick fix for an anthrax attack, which, by the way, Saddam Hussein got the anthrax that he supposedly had in stockpile from the U.S. weapons lab in Fort Detrick, by the way, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Military intelligence knew that Saddam Hussein had anthrax because they sold it to him. So they needed to protect our own troops against our own biological weapon, and they needed to have it done quickly. You know, they couldn't wait 2 and 3 and 4 months. They had to have it in weeks. So the FDA grudgingly said, okay, we'll license the squalene because we need a one-shot booster anthrax vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you license it the first time, you can't recall it, no matter what. And the 140,000 troops that were injected with these experimental MF-59 squalene, everyone came down with a what's called Gulf War syndrome. Every one of them. So that's a medical record. And if, folks, if you can't grasp what I'm saying, go and get Gary Matsumoto's expose book on the subject. It's called Vaccine A. Just type in vaccine-a.com. That takes you right to his website, and you can read chapters in the book. And if you like what you read, buy the book. It's a great, great read to educate yourself on squalene. Okay?
Okay. Dr. Ott, would you like to take a call?
Absolutely.
Gary from Arkansas, you have a question or comment for Dr. Truott?
Yes. I thank Mr. Ott for clarifying this thing with Dr. Carley and Miss Burgermeister, I guess her name is.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like your explanation better than the other ones I've heard. Question is, I think you're quite correct in that no laws have been broken. However, could not the people of Fort Detrick be held accountable for the release of this? Obviously, it's their virus, and they're in charge of security there. Security obviously was breached, and somebody needs to be held accountable for that.
I agree 100%. What you have to realize, though, is this is a political hot potato of the highest order. We can't have, you know, as righteous as the cause is, citizens just can't go around filing charges with the FBI or any other thing. You've got to go through the proper channels. And that, in this case, you've got to bring federal grand jury indictments down. Again, to do that correctly, you've got to prove that it was released. And that means subpoena power. You've got to have a witness coming forward, in other words. You're going to have somebody in Fort Detrick willing to blow the whistle. You know, I thought we had that happening 2 weeks ago. And I had a call from a gentleman who was very nervous. He said he was calling from the California area, said he had proof of how the weaponized virus was released. He'd heard me on the radio, got my phone number, and was calling me. I said, well, take your information in. If you got this documents, call me from a federal building when you go and see it. Go look up a U.S. attorney. They have to take this evidence in and they have to log it in, and then call me and we'll send our team down and we'll give them the rest of the story, and then boom, we have something to take to a federal grand jury. But this never happened. I think it's the same guy. 2 days after he talked to me, he was arrested and charged with making threats against the White House. If it's the same guy, I don't know if it is or not, but it's awful suspicious in timing. An 8-hour standoff in front of the federal building. The federal building was evacuated, and it made headline news for just one day. Now it's like, who cares? I believe this guy was taking this file into the U.S. Attorney's office and was stopped. Now, I can't prove that. I don't know for sure, but that's my gut feeling.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I have a comment to make. This is going to get very serious locally and very up close personally. And there's three little kids that live fairly close to me. They're kind of like my adopted grandchildren, ages 6, 8, and 10. And if they shoot those boys up in school and something happens to them, somebody's going to be held accountable. And on myself, on a personal level, I'll tell you this right now. Somebody purchased me for those damn vaccines, I will consider that an assault, attempted assault with a deadly weapon, and I'll deal with it that way.
You know, sir, I appreciate that, and you're not alone. I've heard this from all across the country. Again, it's attacking people's most basic rights. But let me submit to you, that's exactly what the response they're hoping for. They
I understand that. We're kind of caught between a rock and a hard spot. But my sense of survival is pretty high.
And you're not alone. I'm the same way. You know, so it's... See how important it is to get this these criminal charges filed correctly. We're just praying. I'm praying that somebody with gonads, with love of people and humanity, will come forward and say, "Look, this is how it was done. I'll be willing to testify," and then we can move rapidly and get these bastards hung. You know,
yes.
I'm saying,
Gary, we've got other callers. I want to thank you.
I have the rope, but we have the trees.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's a mass murder. They deserve no life.
Gary, thank you for calling in. He's gone, I guess. We've got some other callers here, Dr. Ott. So
yes.
I want to give them a shot here. Cynthia in Colorado Springs, welcome to Evident Footprints. Question or comment for Dr. Ott? Well, we're not hearing Cynthia. Going once. Going twice. Okay. Gail from Tennessee, are you with us?
I am.
Welcome to Evident Footprints. Do you have a comment or question for Dr. Ott?
Well, I think it's wonderful that there's a grassroots movement to try to stop this, although I think it's unfortunate that we are in a position where time's running out for us. I will say that I lost my great-grandmother to the 1918 Spanish influenza flu. I am Senator Bob Dole's family.
Uh-huh.
Her name was Elizabeth Dole, and we all know that flu started at the Fort Riley military base.
That's right.
Right. Anyway, I know a lot about this. You know, it's a personal thing for me. And why on God's green earth these people would dig up a dead body so that they could get the germs shows you the sick level of these people.
Let me just tell you about that if I could, because
sure.
I tell you, I've talked to people up in Brevik Mission, Alaska, who helped with that excavation.
Yeah.
There's a gentleman who came forward and told me exactly what went on, and guess what? There was a mass grave. There were 80 inhabitants of Brevik Mission in 1918. 76 died. They put a mass grave in the summer. They just dumped all these bodies in. So here comes this team from Fort Detrick, and they sift through over 2 weeks through all these bodies looking for the virus. Can you imagine that? Can you just imagine that a Native American village turned into that type of gruesome spectacle? And they could...
Excuse me one second, folks. Gail, if you have some speakers on, can you make sure they're turned down?
I don't have anything on.
Oh, okay. Right. We were getting a feedback. Sounded like it was coming on your end. So, okay, thank you. Sorry to interrupt.
And so they didn't find what they were looking for, and they were saying, well, it's a failure. Then they realized that the matron of the village at the time was a lady quite heavy set, and she was buried in a separate grave, a deeper grave, and they unearthed her at the very last, and sure enough, her mummified remains, there was so much fat there that it preserved her lungs intact, and they found all that they would ever need. I talked with the gentleman,
Lord.
And the Inuits that were there helping, they were paid very well for this macabre project. They said all of them that night, after seeing the lung tissue taken out by pinking shears, they all had nightmares of the same kind. They saw this woman's eyes open and glow red, and they woke up deathly ill.
Really?
Yeah, that's an amazing story, but absolutely true. And they said, we realized we did something very, very, very wrong and very evil. And Mr. Kakuna, the gentleman who told me the story, was just weeping, wishing he had never been involved. That,
I'm sure,
you know, can you believe that? I mean, it's against the law for anybody to go in and disturb a Native American burial ground looking for, you know,
yeah,
pots or arrowheads or anything under the antiquities laws. But it's okay for a group of army scientists to go up there and dig into corpses looking for a deadly virus. Are you kidding me? Yeah, it's sick.
So this is the industrial military complex who's making their final push to cull the herd, as they say.
I think you're absolutely right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Gail, thank you for calling in. We've got to cut it short here. We've got more callers. Thank you for calling in, and do call in again. Now, let's see. Dr. Rott, I've got a question here from one of our listeners. Would like you to expound a little bit, if you're knowledgeable about Dr. Henry Nyman, Sharon Sander of FluTrackers.com, and the information that they're putting out, which seems to be sort of aligned with the WHO, Kathleen Sebelius, CID, et cetera, et cetera. Any comment?
Well, I need to only say what I do know. I don't know Dr. Nyman. I've read and I've listened to much of what he said. I don't know what to think. Sometimes I hear what he's saying, and I'm saying, this guy's great. And then I hear other things he says, and it doesn't jive with the facts. I heard him say that, you know, people should take this vaccine. I look at his company, Recombinant, you know, and I got to believe he's knows and been consulted on this thing from the beginning. That's the suspicion I have. I don't have any hard proof of that. And I'd like to give people the benefit of the doubt. I hope he's doing the right thing for the right reasons. So I don't want to make any other speculations than that. Just be awake and aware, people. Anybody that tells you to take the vaccine is just not correct.
Now, I want to reference a story I saw, I think it was over this past weekend. Wolf Blitzer was doing his show. He has a 2 or 3 hour show on CNN in the evenings, and he was interviewing Arne Duncan. Now, as I understand, he's the Secretary of Public Education, and they were already saying that there was a pandemic in Alabama and another one of the southern states, which I, you know, it sounds ridiculous. But they had another guy working the green screen in the background, and as Duncan is bringing this information forward, it was so scripted, it was pathetic. Let's put it that way. This other gentleman, who I interpreted as a CIA agent, was drawing Wolf Blitzer's attention to these prearranged graphs and charts that they kept bringing up on the screen. And then the next night, Arne Duncan is talking about young kids that are killing each other in Chicago, shooting each other. It's disingenuous how these people are experts in all these different things. And, you know, this is public education. What is that? Is that propaganda? Is that just another word for propaganda? Brainwashing? Mind control? What is it? I don't know, but I thought I'd mention that it looked very rehearsed, very planned, and Wolf Blitzer was just along for the ride.
Well, getting back to that, the paper that you have published, you know, that you printed up, if you go back to my addendums on there, you'll see a study that's a must-read. It's, you know, the whole study's not there, just the abstract. But it's very clear that, you know, they took this so-called pandemic virus, isolated it, and they wanted to see its transmissibility rates compared with seasonal flu, so they can better graph its spread and how it would progress, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they inoculated the ferrets with the culture, got them sick with the flu, and put them in with healthy ferrets to see how fast it would transfer.
Okay.
And the study showed it didn't. No transmissibility.
Okay,
do you understand
what
that means? Do you understand what that means, folks? It's not going to be transferred among humans either. So how in the heck did it get out in the first place?
Yes. Well, we first heard about this when Barack Obama went to Mexico, as I recall.
That's right.
Those were the first reported deaths. And it was blamed on the crew that went there 2 weeks prior to his arrival.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of his people got sick, they said. We got another caller. Cynthia is back. Cynthia in Colorado Springs. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Ott?
I have a comment and also a question. I find that, this is Cynthia. I'm in Colorado Springs. I'm a nurse. And I called in last week in a broadcast on Thursday. There's
mm-hmm.
a website, patentform.us, and you can type in a search term or a patent number in its search condition. And I just typed in squalene, and I find a number of patents for squalene synthetase inhibitors. So squalene, in at least this form, successfully from many patents from the early 90s, can be inhibited. In addition, from my understanding, and this could be clarified by Dr. Ott, the 1918 pandemic flu was a combination of three viruses. If you consider a description like the letter Y, the 25th letter of the alphabet, and each branch of that Y being a different virus, whereby one is the Asian bird flu, one is typhus, and the third is swine flu. The combination that was lethal from 1918 were three very virulent viruses attacking at once. It was kind of an overload to our human immune system versus just the swine flu being an overload.
Exactly.
I would think more susceptible people this time around could be individuals who have had several years of a flu vaccine, thinking they were protecting themselves, receiving in the past few years Asian bird flu and typhus. And now this year, with an airborne exposure to swine flu, receiving too strong of a third flu in a body that would be loaded down with mercury and aluminum from the past years of vaccines. And
good point.
Since these viruses are RNA retroviruses, and HIV complex that was discussed last Thursday was an RNA retrovirus, which was susceptible to the patented cure 5676977, created by Dr. Marvin Antleman, and the success of patent 5676977 in eliminating the HIV virus, which is five viruses and microbes put together in a complex, an RNA retrovirus recombinant complex. The success of 5676977, which is a trivalent silver oxide, currently you can buy it after market as Bionade. That success is because it attacks an area on the cell of an RNA retrovirus HIV complex that has a nitrogen and a sulfur group that pops out like two mushrooms. And the silver comes along and it attacks those two expressions of nitrogen and sulfur. And it basically pops a hole, so to speak, for lack of a better description, it pops a hole in the protein coat. And our white blood cells can then go in and eat the foreign protein. And this was also further demonstrated by Dr. Marvin Antleman, who made 5676977. He made 648-5755, which is the same trivalent silver oxide, but he used it on many types of virus-caused cancers, leading anywhere from head to toe, your bone, your brain, your eye, your colon, your prostate, liver, pancreas, ovary, bladder, kidney, testicular, stomach, lung, bronchi, esophagus, trachea, all those, skin, melanoma, all those would fall, and leukemia and lymphoma would fall and not survive the silver oxide because it was bound with ozone. and many things can't withstand ozone.
Exactly.
It just has this very strong action on the cell wall. So I don't know if you've read about this or have a comment to think about that in relation to the squalene. I know that the Bionade is also sold today with a chelating agent that can come in like a carpet sweeper and take all these broken up pieces of protein and clear them from the body well.
Yeah, that's a ZoHeal.
Yeah, ZoHeal. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, Cynthia, that's a lot of information there. We want to move on a little bit, but I want to thank you for calling in, and do call in again. It certainly, you know what you're talking about, and I think both Dr. Ott and I agree with what you're saying. Dr. Ott, I wanted to ask you a question regarding this company, Affymetrix, which is, well, they have a patent in single nucleotide polymorphism, or otherwise known as SNP. Mm-hmm. And there are some references along with some of the patent holder names as to its relationship to diabetes, too. And I'm wondering if this isn't technology that actually induces disease.
Well, I don't know. I don't know on that. Very possibly. If you go back to the references I had in the paper, again, going back to the projects that were done in New Orleans in the late 50s, you see this is all documented in the book, Dr. Mary's Monkey, where these monkey viruses were basically irradiated by this linear particle accelerator and then were injected back into test subjects and found that not only cancer was induced, but also diabetes and other disease states. So, these outgrowths of new type of structures, like you just mentioned, could very well be, used as disease inducers.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't be surprised at all.
Yes. Okay, and that particular patent is held by some of the people that work with Affymetrix, as well as, I understand that their agents are Hoffman LaRoche Incorporated Patent Law Department. So, we have these pharmaceutical companies working hand-in-hand on various components of this whole issue. We should really be paying attention to this. That's the general feeling I get. I didn't really stumble on this, if you know what I mean.
Right.
I was looking for this. This was the smoking cannon I was looking for. And I found it, and I think there's a lot more. I think I just scratched the surface, really.
As I said in that, in the paper, It's a sad fact that this is one industry that will create the disease to, they create the demand to produce the need. Okay, it's reversed. If there's not enough demand for their pharmaceutical drug, they need to create it.
Yes. Now we've got another caller patiently waiting here. Liz in Florida, would you, are you still with us? Liz in Florida?
Yeah, Liz Brook.
Hi, Liz. How are you? There you go. Dr. Ott, you know who this is.
Yes, hi, sweetheart.
Hey, I'm very, very concerned. Down here, we're looking at this vaccination program going into effect within days on our children in the schools. I'm scared to death for the kids. And I don't think we're going to get anything through the courts before we can protect them. And the only alternatives I'm seeing are Bionade and ZoHeal. What can we do to save them, to to help them.
Well, you know, we talked about these live viruses and the squalene. If they're injected versus the nasal, inhaler or injector, I just don't see that even as good as the products you said, I don't see them inhibiting the squalene. I just don't. I wish there was something I could say to make it better, but that's the reality. I don't know what to tell you. Yeah, it's just one of the things that once it gets into these bodies, especially these young children, it's just going to be amazingly deadly. And the sad thing is, you won't know about it right away. It typically takes anywhere from 3 weeks to as many as 6 months for these immune system responses to manifest. So, it's not going to be an immediate problem. Keep that in mind, too.
Well, on the basis of...
What about shedding the virus, after they've been infected? Will they be shedding the virus for 3 weeks to 6 months?
Yeah. Typically, the worst time is 72 hours. That's when it's the most spreadable, transmissible. Let's hope for the best with this, okay? The studies I just referenced in this paper show that, at least in the ferrets, this is not transmissible by typical means. But who's to say, again, once this is put into the body and the latent viruses that are already in the bloodstream and in the body from other vaccinations won't combine to make this highly transmissible and highly deadly. So this is a game of Russian roulette here. It's absolutely uncalled for. It's insanity. It's not necessary.
Yes, I mean, what we're hearing here is, from what I've studied, and I'm just mentioning Bionade, it seems to be one solution to this whole issue without getting vaccinations. Of course, there has been so much money invested in this and anticipated that they're going to sell this, like you mentioned, the free vaccines in the days of Kansas City, the case that you mentioned.
Yes.
We pay for this. I mean, one way or another, we're signing our lives away. And the, when you think of Agenda 21 and the, the monuments in Georgia, what do they call it? The Georgia Guidestones.
Right.
And they have in 8 different languages this declaration that they're going to make the earth a peaceful, safe place to live by reducing the population to 500 million, down from 6.7 billion. I mean, this is pure insanity. I say with the politicians and give them the vaccine first, and let's wait a year and see how many of them are around.
We had a very interesting discussion with Dr. Deagle's show today. Mr. Friedman was on, and he's an amazing individual. Taking the Kabbalah mathematical structures, he basically puts out, what's happened in the past and accurately predicted what he thinks, what will happen in the future. And it's not good news. I mean, it's like you said, they really want to have this mass die-off. And it goes back again to biblical scripture. I mean, the prophet Daniel in the Old Testament foresaw what he called the abomination of desolation. And Christ in Matthew 24 says the same thing. He reiterates what Daniel had seen. And he said that in the last days before the end, there will be an abomination of desolation. And he gave us a few clues. He said, woe be unto those with child in those days and those who give suck, or nursing mothers or pregnant women, woe unto them. isn't it just interesting that that's who's going to be in the front of the lines for this shot? Again, it's following a very macabre Luciferian agenda. You know, I guess what I'm saying is there, what hope do we have? What is there to be said? Well, Christ said, unless the elect, he said, on the elect's sake, for the elect's sake, these days shall be shortened. Well, how many elect are there? For whose sake can these days be shortened to just hours? That's where, I guess, spirituality comes into play here.
Yeah, okay. I think it would be interesting to look at who owns the stock in these drugs.
Absolutely.
I think it would be very revealing to see everyone in Congress and on the roster of beneficiaries, stockholders, what banks, what corporations have a stake in this. Outside of the pharmaceutical companies, of course. I think it would be very interesting. I think we should all start researching that.
Yeah, I would like to believe that they're just saying, well, okay, we're doing this for a big money windfall profit. We know the models are showing that there won't be much of any damage to anybody. You know, I'm hoping that is going to happen. I get, you know, there's probably about 20% chance that could happen. So let's pray for that to be the end result of this, and not the other bad thing that could, this recombination could result in massive, massive deaths. You know, there's a story that just, or a news article that came out. The CDC is inventorying and bringing into play in all regional hospitals iron lungs, again, as in the days of polio. They want to resuscitate and have any type of artificial ventilators going into play across this country. To me, that's a huge, ominous red flag that they know the cytokine storms are going to be happening with this vaccine. And that's not a piece of good news for me.
No, not for me either. Well, Liz, any questions before I let you go?
No, I'm leaning along the lines of Dr. Ott and just praying and you know, I'm finding hope in buying aid and Zeal Heal. I've certainly got a good supply here, and you know, I've been considering getting it out to people who are falling ill right now in the beginning end of this thing, or in the beginning of this thing as it comes at us, because more and more I'm hearing people are being diagnosed with it. And younger people at the Central Florida at the universities are actually dying from it. And I, about a week and a half ago, a 19-year-old died here in Central Florida. And I had kind of wished I'd been able to get her some Bionade before it all went down that way.
Now, they're calling that swine flu there?
Pardon me?
Are they calling that swine flu? Are these swine flu cases?
H1N1. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to see rescue missions.
I don't doubt that people have died. I only doubt that it's really the H1N1. Okay, because there's, you know, teenage kids get spinal meningitis and viral meningitis infections all the time, and they die much the same way. Here in Utah, for instance, the local newspapers here interviewed some doctors who openly said, well, the CDC says that if anybody comes in with these type of symptoms, label it swine flu without any blood testing. And they were saying, well, looking at my records, there are just as many sick people from last prior years. How do we know it's not West Nile virus? How do you know it's not swine? These are the questions that the doctors were asking back in April and May. Very valid questions, you see. How do you know without documentation and blood tests? which are very, very expensive and time-consuming. You see the fear base going on here?
Yes. Engineers, we got a little bit of echo there. Well, Liz, I want to thank you for calling in. Keep your chin up. Keep doing the work that you're doing. God bless you for that. And we're going to arrive some solutions here. We've got more work to do, of course. We have to do the work. We can't rely on those who have taken an oath to do that on our behalf. So that's my rant. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, Liz. Thank you so much.
Take care, guys.
Okay, you too.
God bless you.
Well, Dr. Rott, have we covered everything that you intended to cover this evening?
I think so. I think we've covered the bases pretty well.
Well, I want to thank you for the work that you're doing and the efforts that you're making to help me get the word out on some of the discoveries I've made. They're trivial in a sense, but they really, it's like finding breadcrumbs, that's why I call it evident footprints.
Right.
We're finding the footprints, and we're seeing that there's a lot more collusion going on in the background than what we're led to believe, and we should be suspicious of that. I think it's only natural to be suspicious. With the predictions that ordinary newscasters are making on TV, they're following a script. It's obvious that this is intended to make billions, if not trillions, of dollars. I'm not buying the explanations I'm hearing. We don't have the evidence of anything that they can make the predictions that they're making. And to come out with laws to try to create the fear to enforce these vaccinations, to impose them on people against their will, is criminal. That's how
Absolutely.
I see it.
Absolutely. We just hope and pray that, like I said before, some inside whistleblowers will come forward and realize the crime that's being perpetrated. I'm believing they're thinking, well, I'm going to get a lot of money for this if I shut my mouth and write with the flow, and nobody's going to really get hurt. But if they believe that, if they're listening, don't believe that. You're guilty of genocide if you keep doing this. We need to stop it now, and time is short.
Yes, we've got to bring the rationale forward and out into the open. And,
absolutely.
This case, maybe next week we'll know a bit more. We can talk about this when you're on the show next week. This case with the Volkswagen Beetle in Los Angeles.
That's right. I believe, though I can't prove it, but my gut feeling is this is the gentleman that I directed in to go to the federal building, and that I would send my information along with it for a case. I don't know. It could be totally coincidental, but something's very weird about that. There's just no way, the story,
mm-hmm.
that somebody that just happens to phone a threat into the White House gets that type of massive SWAT team stoppage, okay? It was way overboard. You phone a threat in, you get visited by the Secret Service, and you get called in for questioning. They do a background check, and they quietly arrest you.
Well, they didn't even do that to John Hinckley when he shot Ronald Reagan.
That's right. There was something much, much, much deeper in national security involved, or I should say, in my opinion, profits were threatened.
Oh, yes, and they fired tear gas, broke the windows, and this guy just sat there and was totally unfazed by the whole
unfazed
experience.
Until they tasered him, he would have sat right through it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The only explanation really is looking at the secret agencies, the Mossad, who train their agents where they build up a resistance to these type of tear gas because they're trained with it. That's the only thing to me that makes sense.
Yeah,
so, who was this guy? What was he trying to take in to the federal building, you see. Could it have been the complete evidence of how this was released from an insider? My gut feeling is that's exactly what was going on.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll know more by next week.
Well, let's just keep praying for divine intervention and help with this, because we're doing the best we can, but we're just a small voice right now. I feel very impotent. I wish I could just shake a tree and make sense fall out of it, but it's not happening so far. Those that we are talking to and getting through in these alternative shows, you know, they're good people and wonderful, but it's like the preaching to the choir, unfortunately. We need to get to them, to the people that are making these decisions in the state level somehow, and we've got to do it quickly.
And we have to hold them accountable, too.
Yes.
Well, thank you for being on the show. I wish you the best. Any website addresses you'd like to give out, yours or any contact information?
Well, yes, there's a pandemicfluonline.com. It's a great resource. We also have labvirus.com, Alex Studer's great addition. All of these websites are just basically giving you up-to-the-minute breaking stories and keeping you up to date on us. Labvirus.com and pandemicfluonline.com are the two I would recommend.
Okay. Well, thank you for being on the show, and I look forward to your interview next week.
Thank you so much, Don. Be safe, and God bless you.
Okay, you too. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our special guest this evening, Dr. Andrew Ott. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick on the sound. All of our callers tonight, I think we set a record for calls on this show. Also like to thank the folks at blogtalkradio.com and Wind Talkers Radio Network. Kudos to all of our Marines and the military around the world that are listening to this show, either live or in an archive. And we wish you safety and Godspeed in coming back home. To our listening audience, I'd like to thank you for tuning in, and join us again tomorrow for another great show. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night or day filled with peace, love, and light. You in the States, have a good night.